The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Joining me for the afternoon update today, two individuals for whom ageing badly is not a problem. Lorcan Nyan, Head of Training at the Communications Clinic, columnist with the Sunday Independent. Jen Hogan, journalist, author and columnist with the Irish Times. You're both very, very welcome.
How are you?
Good to see you both. Will it ever stop raining, Jen?
Oh, it seems like not.
Give me some hope. Oh, you're wearing a very bright coloured top.
I am.
Bringing some hope and light and joy.
Full barbecue in the grey days of...
It's miserable, isn't it? It has,
and you know what? If you've got kids off, couple of weeks, it has been particularly hellish. But it's miserable, and there's no end in sight. And not only because we have Storm Kathleen on the way, not only is this problematic because it's making life miserable for us all, we're going to have very few potatoes.
Yeah, sorry, that is a real problem.
This is a huge, huge problem.
We'll talk about that maybe in more detail. Just Alan O'Reilly from Carlow Weather is actually on the line. Alan, what is the forecast for the next few days?
Well, it's wet and windy at different times, but it's generally not pleasant. More rain this evening, some heavy rain actually this evening moving up across the country. Tomorrow is going to be a windy day. It's going to be quite breezy and there will be some showers and more rain tomorrow night. That's ahead of Storm Kathleen, which is going to track to the west of Ireland early on Saturday morning. A very, very windy day right across the country on Saturday. There's yellow and orange warnings in place now from 7 a.m. Saturday morning right through until 7 p.m. or 8 p.m. on Saturday evening. And it's going to be very strong and gusty conditions right across the country, but especially in parts of the south, southwest and the west, which will bear the brunt of the strongest winds on Saturday. But there will be some sunny spells on Saturday along with some heavy showers. So it's a bit of a mixed bag, but the wind is the biggest problem with Storm Kathleen.
I saw a headline the other day, Alan, and it was from the UK, and it was their wettest 12-month period ever on record since the kind of middle of the 19th century when they started measuring these things. I assume, you know, what sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. We're no different.
It's been incredibly wet, really, for the last 8 months here especially. So since July, rainfall amounts have been above normal and there just hasn't been any real proper drying spell that has lasted more than a couple of days. The rainfall amounts, especially in the last couple of months, on top of the wet end of summer, autumn, winter was exceptionally wet. March, twice the average rainfall in parts of the south and the east. And as I say, we've started off wet in April, more rain to come. So it is particularly really bad for ground conditions, but also the fact that some weather stations had 29 days of rainfall in March. So if you're trying to get out to find a break to walk the dog or to do a run or to do whatever, it's been exceptionally hard.
I've had many wet walks of the dog over March is what I learned. Alan, listen, thanks a million for that update. Alan O'Reilly from Carlow Weather. I mean, Jen, not even your shirt. Brightness of your shirt can lift me after that.
It's like living in a Father Ted episode, isn't it?
It is, but this is already serious because, I mean, there's an impact on people's just well-being and their overall kind of sense of mental health and everything when it's so miserable outside all the time. But Lorcan, Jen mentioned potatoes. I mean, there's farmers up and down this country and there's kind of a cohort of people who kind of immediately shrug off farmers complaining. But not alone do they not have spring crops in the ground, they didn't even get winter crops in the ground.
Yeah, and look, farmers will be accused of crying wolf quite often, but in this one in particular, I mean, the wolf is very much there. I mean, it is very, very, very real. So, I mean, if you look at the fact that in some areas the rainfall has been 275% higher than we would be used to for March, across the country it's about 115% higher than it has been over the last 12 months. That has a massive knock-on impact, okay, because they're not able to plant. They've already missed their window for some of the crops, the tillage crops that you would have, okay. And they're about to basically miss the window for the vast majority of tillage crops. So at this stage, farmers would say that normally what 80% of the seed is in, and most farmers are saying they haven't got to do any. So they haven't been able to plant at all. And this then has a big knock-on effect because we have a window for Irish crops, which is when it's too hot in Europe, in Spain and the likes to grow crops. It's that window that we're able to get in and kind of serve the European market. It looks like at the moment we might miss that. So, I mean, it is really, really a big issue. I mean, my primary concern is I have a flight to get Sunday morning to get to Northampton for a 12:15 kickoff for Munster, and I'm worried about Soren Catlin. So that's the main worry that I think listeners would agree that's the biggest deal. But the impact on food production in Ireland is also quite a big deal.
Well, everything is local. I mean, as Alan O'Reilly was talking, I wrote down in the corner of my page, league final in Thurles. I also am worried about what sporting events I have on this
but
weekend.
But we do need to look at, there's a lot of talk at the moment about just transition for agriculture, and that tends to focus a lot on, right, let's get away from emissions and move across. But we also do have to look at the fact that, like, there's already impacts. I mean, we've already missed the boat. We've already got this wrong. This rainfall, I mean, it's annoying that it's raining, but it is here to stay, is what it seems like. I mean, MedEireann they're explicitly saying this is significantly linked to climate change. So just transition also has to look at how do we help farmers transition in terms of their crops. And it can't just be grow forests, because it's a lifestyle and it's a big part of rural Ireland. So just transition has to look at how do we keep farmers growing. We can't give up on food production, but how do we do it in a way that it will actually work in the new climate we've created for ourselves?
Jed, I think that's what a lot of farmers feel, and they're not necessarily the kind of the loudest voices in the debate, but a lot of kind of farmers up and down the country, the backbone of the industry, they feel what's often lost in the conversation about kind of just transition and the sacrifices made are that these are their livelihoods.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to pinpoint anybody else who's kind of been told, well, listen, for the greater good of society, you need to kind of cut 20, 30% off your revenue stream next year. Listen, you know what I mean? It's better for all of us, but that's what you've got to do. I can't think of anybody else who would put up with it quietly.
No, I can't either. No, you're right there. I mean, I don't really know what the answer is. Like, growing trees isn't going to be the answer. It's funny, like, how certain things hit home and we only kind of maybe see other people's perspectives, like the farmer's perspectives, when you go, we're not going to have enough potatoes. Hang on a second. How is this going to affect me? Instead of looking at the fact that it is people's livelihoods and that you know, how it's going to impact them. Maybe there's that little bit of insight. Certainly for me, the idea that my main food group is going to be cut back. You're talking about your sporting events. I'm talking about the fact that I'm half potato, half chocolate. And how is this going to impact me going forward? But it is kind of terrifying to think that this is what's coming. This is what kind of our continuous thing. 29 days, did he say, of rain in March? Like, that there's no end in sight. And so, yes, it's their livelihood. But yes, also something has to be done, particularly when we know that it's climate change, that we're living through the impacts of climate change. It's just, I don't really know what the solution is there.
We put down grass seed in June last year and, oh, God be with the days, I was out twice a day watering it. and then it struck and it hasn't stopped raining since. Anyway, it's a bog. But that's the other issue as well. I mean, kids, parents listening to this, up and down the country as well, have kids at camps and pitches are like sponges. What? They are so wet.
Even when you think about, like, I was just thinking my lads are due to play a match now this weekend. And I'm going to be honest, there's a bit of me said, would it be the worst thing in the world if they were cancelled? You know, am I ready to get back into the full thing of away games and giving up your whole weekends to travelling? But the reality of it is, even for kids involved in sport, it is a bit of a nightmare. The camps are one thing. One of my teenagers was involved in one of the camps that was going on, and for the kids taking part in it, it's a huge thing. But even just for their everyday activities, even for mental health, even for things like exercise, we know we don't move enough, adults and kids. It's just so grim. It's much harder to motivate yourself in the weather,
is.
But it's not even safe to play on some of the pitches when they're completely waterlogged.
It kind of, when compared, Lorcan, to kind of livelihoods being eroded, it might seem a lot less serious. But, you know, again, I was at an under-16 match last night and I left halfway through. I mean, it's the joy of not having to work yesterday. I was able to go to stuff midweek, sporting stuff. And I went to a club hurling match and it was just so miserable. Like, these lads, it's a summer sport. It can't be any fun.
Did people suitably judge you for leaving because it was
no, I waited until other people. Never be the first to leave. Just don't be the first to get up and go. And after that, you're grand.
Do you know what might brighten it? Do you know Storm Kathleen? Do you know who it's named after?
No.
And a woman called Kathleen Lonsdale, who was born in Kildare. And a phenomenal woman who I hadn't heard about at all. Very, very famous scientist. The first female member of the Royal Society in the UK. First ever female member. She won the Davy Medal, which is the Royal Society Chemistry Medal. It is their most prestigious medal that they have. 7 honorary doctors and first female professor in UCL. And she's from Kildare. And apparently her brother was the radio operator who got the signal on the other boat for the fact that the Titanic was sinking.
Paul Moynagh. Now, Paul Mina is a voice that people will be thinking, who is Paul Mina again? Paul Mina was one of these ubiquitous voices during COVID, and he was chair of the Kathleen Lonsdale Institute for Human Health Research at Maynooth University. As you said it there, I said, I've definitely mentioned her name on air, and it was during COVID, probably about once a week when we were getting updates.
A phenomenal woman, born and killed there, only stayed there for a couple of years, and then they moved to the UK, but we can claim her all the same in Maynooth.
Oh, absolutely. We'll get her in an Irish
jersey. Well, they do it
so as it's lashing rain and the gale, and my flight is landed, and
wasn't Kathleen great?
Well, at least, well, thank you, Kathleen. At least Kathleen was a great woman.
She was great.
Well, that is an upbeat note to wrap up conversation about the weather. Conversations happening around many dinner tables about the weather. It seems all we're talking about. Can I ask you instead about something we covered in the show yesterday? Anton and the lads covered it in great detail, which was continued problems in University Hospital Limerick. And I mean, there's this meeting today then, Lorcan, happening between Stephen Donnelly, Minister for Health, Bernard Gloucester from the HSE is down there as well. I mean, to a degree, that's optics, isn't it? Like the Minister for Health and the man running the HSE are not going to kind of solve overcrowding problems by holding a meeting in UHL today, are they?
Well, it's been there for 10 years and we've heard about it consistently for 10 years. Look, there were announcements coming out of that meeting that were effectively a list of things that I won't go through, but basically a bit more beds here, a bit more beds there. They're going to accelerate the already promised 96 beds in a different area. So effectively they're looking at more beds. But yeah, look, it is optics to a degree, and there's also the optics of there's a protest going on there. And so Donnelly was there before the protest had started. So yeah, to a degree it's optics. I find the Limerick Hospital thing, it's kind of hard to wrap your head around, because like, I mean, it's been so bad for so long. Minister Donnelly has said himself that, look, they asked for more beds, we gave more beds, they asked for more staff, we gave more staff, and yet the problem hasn't got any better. So he's very solidly, or was previously very solidly, saying this is a management issue and they've got a new person over that area within the HSE and they're hoping that they will fix it. But even the list of stuff coming out today, there's no sense of a vision. Like, there's no sense of right, in 3 years' time, here's where we're hoping that this will be. And I think what's happened, and it's very tragic that it has taken this to happen, but we're so used to hearing about overcrowding and the stories of people in chairs or people in trolleys and the discomfort and the kind of lack of dignity that you would have in that situation. But what we've had recently is, we always suspected that this stuff led to bad medical outcomes, but we've had the stories of very clearly this stuff being linked to awful, awful deaths. And so that's obviously going to crystallise it. And then layered on top of that, you have the fact that the protesters are consistently saying things like, this just shows that you don't take our concerns here seriously, that you're not listening to us in this area of the country. Which is, you know, kind of a constant refrain from areas that aren't Dublin, effectively. So there's all of this stuff going on. But like, it's the same system, it's the same funding, and yet Limerick is so, so much worse. So I'm surprised that the people in Limerick and that surrounding area aren't even angrier than they are. Because there doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason for it to be as bad as it is compared to the rest of the country.
Yeah, and I guess so. There's a local problem then politicians have, and Stephen Donnelly has, and the government has in a Limerick sense. Jen, to a degree, UHL though becomes an avatar for other people as well for just failings in the health system. It's the kind of the manifestation of it, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, I was reading a piece there written by Paul Cullen in the Irish Times, and he was talking about what was it specifically about Limerick? Why is Limerick failing? And he was looking at some of the things around demographics and stuff and their age, the age of people maybe that are attending their levels of deprivation, and even things like their out of hours GP services relying so heavily on locums who tended to send people there. So in terms of trying to see, you know, what's going on with Limerick, like why is Limerick like that? But I actually spoke to people even within the area that kind of attend there, and even some medics today, and there was a GP talked to me, and she said, you know, when she tries to refer people, that they're afraid to go there. So it is,
that's the thing, you hear that in some other parts of the country as well. I remember Our Lady of Lourdes for a while maybe had that reputation. Yeah. There was a sense of, oh, don't go there, go to the other hospital that's further away, you'll get better treatment.
And you're hearing from people who have that kind of that experience, insight sitting there, and those who have gone talking about it as a totally horrific experience. But I suppose what is being lost as well is those that went and talk about how well the staff did try to look after them. It's that pressure on them. But we have become nearly desensitised to what we're hearing there. You know, we are so used to hearing about overcrowding. We're so used to hearing about overcrowding in UHL. And maybe it is a surprise that or maybe it isn't a surprise that it actually took something as tragic as what has happened with the two deaths to make us realise what a major issue this is. And the idea that we might even compare it and go, well, at least such and such a hospital isn't perhaps struggling as much as UHL. But it isn't something that the people that are living around or feel comfortable or feel there's somewhere for me to go where I can be safely treated. And if you have a GP trying to refer someone in who will not go in, I mean, that's just scary and sad that that's the situation, or that's where we found ourselves.
They have, or at least the stat that I read there is that they have either 6 or 9% of the amount of people who go to emergency departments in Ireland go there. So they've 6 to 9% of that, but they've 17% of the percentage of people on trolleys. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a disconnect between, you know, so like it's not just the amount of people going in. And look, I think all emergency departments, there has been a significant increase because of demographics, which is the wider thing that we're going to have to get a handle on as a country as well, is that like the current resourcing levels will not work because our demographics are increasing. Yeah. And I mean, that's going to become
a wider
issue.
And the pressure on GP services, you're right, you know, and more reliance on locums. Mm-hmm. You've got fewer GPs in rural areas. So you've got kind of GPs with a bigger and bigger list. They don't know patients as well. A patient presents with problems. You know, they might know Larkin well and say, Larkin, you're grand, go home, I'll talk to you tomorrow or the next day. Jen, I don't really know Jen. I don't know the history that well. Yeah. I'm just going to play it safe here. Because again, and it's another issue then gets rolled into it, kind of litigation and the fear of it. You don't want to expose yourself to it. I'll play it safe. I'll send her into hospital. Yeah. Anyway, the reason Limerick is so bad is because of the closing down of hospitals in surrounding areas, as is somebody else that's often cited as well. In relation to rain, one of our listeners says, I don't want any of you to feel bad. I suspect they do. But I left Ireland in 2001 and I'm listening to you live from the south of Spain, enjoying a €3 pint in 25 degree weather.
But they must miss us.
I say
if they're listening,
they definitely. Yes, that's a good point. That are they happy? They couldn't be happy if they're listening.
How could you be happy with €3 pints and sunshine? Come on.
Ah, no, yeah, exactly. Come home. Bring your waiters. Listen, if they come home, the last thing I want to talk to you about is this. Well, there's a new pub innovation. It's by Heineken. I don't want to talk about Heineken too much because it's a marketing campaign. But what it is an attempt to celebrate the Irish pub. It's kind of happening though in tandem with an actual campaign from the vintners to give the Irish pub, the traditional Irish pub, whatever that is in your mind's eye, UNESCO heritage status.
Yeah, Larkin. Just to quote from the campaign for a second, I won't mention
the Heineken campaign.
Is that they aim to safeguard historical Irish pubs, advocating for their transformation into museums as a sustainable solution for preservation, which I don't really know what that means, but I wanted to read it out all the same.
More people in the pub possibly buying Heineken products, I think is what they're looking for.
But I did what they're doing here is that there's going to be QR codes in pubs and you can scan it and you can see the history of the pub. And like, so the first pub that they're looking at is Toners here, okay? Toners is just down the road there. It's a pub I would go to. I mean, possible a post-radio pint of a Thursday evening might be happening here. If people come around me, scanning QR codes. Would you move over there for a second? I want to read about the history. I was like, well, that is not why we are here.
That's not why you're going to the pub.
Yeah, we go to Irish pubs because... not because of the history of the pub itself, but because of your history in the pub, is how I would feel. You know, that like there are pubs you have a connection to because you go there consistently. It's family memories you've had there, memories of friends. So Irish pubs are special because Irish people have a pub culture, not because of the pubs themselves. We all have pubs that we would go to saying, I have a connection to this place and therefore I enjoy a pint here more than I enjoy it anywhere else. I was in Kerry for the weekend, Spillane's in the Maharees near Castle Gregory is a pub my family have gone to for decades. We were there again. It's amazing when you go there, but I don't care necessarily, all right, people of Splans, about the history of their pub. I care about my family history in that pub. And I think that's what people care about, really, or your personal history to it.
Jen, they've got this the wrong way around. Instead of turning the pubs into museums, they should just start serving pints in museums.
Why is the Guinness Storehouse so popular?
Exactly, because they did both.
If we want to make people cultural, offer them alcohol. If you want to have more of an interesting culture.
I was down in the National Gallery last week. I had time to kill. Great place to wander around for free if you have time to kill, but I could have done with a pint, you see.
Helped you appreciate what you were viewing more. Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
You're more emotional about it.
Exactly.
Why are you crying? Jen Hogan, journalist, author, columnist at the Irish Times. Larkin Nyan, head of training at the Communications Clinic, columnist at the Sunday Independent as well, folks. Thanks a million for joining us here.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.